Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We once used to have experts here talking about inflation being dead in America. Well, not now. I'm David Brancaccio. There's confirmation today that inflation in the U.S. is at a new 40-year high. Maybe you knew that already by paying for things out of your household budget. On Thursdays, we consult Diane Swonk. She's the chief economist at Grant Thornton. Hi.
Good morning.
Well, our own personal survey already showed this. Things are getting more expensive, and now the government has ratified that.
Absolutely. What we're seeing is 7.9% inflation in February, and it's already moved up from there. We saw increases that were fairly broad-based. This was energy, this was food. But beyond energy and food, we also saw goods prices continue their upward climb.
What about goods inflation versus service sector?
We had been hoping that goods inflation would abate as service sector inflation picked up. You know, remember, this is a month where we came out of the Omicron wave and hotel room rates soared, along with airfares. And I think that's important to understand as well, because we're starting to see the service sector show some real inflation now. What I worry about is shelter costs, which are up at their fastest pace since the height of the housing bubble back in 2006, 2007, and we'll easily cross those numbers as we move into later this year.
Now, I get that this affects really everybody, these price hikes, and not everybody is getting into a new, better job each and every month. But that said, the labor market is still very strong, so inflation doesn't tell the whole economic story.
No, and in fact, part of the reason we're seeing such a dissonance in terms of consumer attitudes between what we call the Conference Board Survey of Consumer Attitudes and the Consumer Sentiment Index from the University of Michigan, they're at their widest gap in history. And that's because the sentiment index is more sensitive to how people feel about inflation, while the confidence index from the Conference Board is more sensitive to labor market conditions, which are very good and improving. And so it's just been a very, very long time that we've had an economy that grew so rapidly and also generated so much heat.
Diane Swonk at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. She's the chief economist there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congress has approved a bipartisan overhaul of the U.S. Postal Service yesterday. The bill gives the PO financial flexibility at a time that we press send on email instead of buying a 58-cent stamp. Postal unions support Congress's overhaul. From the Workplace Culture Desk, here's Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino.
When Mark Dimenstein joined the Postal Service as a clerk in 1983, the workforce was growing.
The Postal Service was a darn good job, good union benefits, union protections, and a mission that any of us who joined can be proud of.
Since about 2007, the post office has been operating in the red, and Dimenstein, now the president of the American Postal Workers Union, says that's had an effect on workers.
Short staffing, long hours, lower morale.
All made worse during the pandemic by safety concerns and large numbers of workers out sick.
The Postal Service has been operating on a shoestring.
Monique Morrissey is an economist at the Economic Policy Institute. She says the Postal Service workforce peaked 20 years ago at roughly 800,000. It's now down to about 500,000 workers. Email and online bill pay have driven down mail volumes and revenue.
They've been short-staffed for a long time. There's been this long-running decline.
Another financial challenge has been the requirement imposed by Congress in 2006 that USPS pre-fund retiree health care costs 75 years into the future, a practice basically unheard of elsewhere in the public sector, says James O'Rourke, a professor of management at Notre Dame.
This resulted in a bill for the Postal Service that had to come out of current income.
And the service hasn't been making enough to cover that. The new legislation removes that requirement by taking future retirees off the Postal Service health plan and transferring them to Medicare. It also forgives billions of dollars in past due debt. Mark Dimenstein with the Postal Union says this could make a big difference.
Staffing should be better. Buildings should be cleaner. Newer vehicles on the road.
The reform bill is estimated to save the Postal Service more than $100 billion over the next 10 years. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
The price of the digital currency Bitcoin has settled back down to $39,200 after a big jump yesterday, this after the Biden administration issued its long-awaited approach to the future of cryptocurrency, which, surprise, calls for the U.S. to lead the charge. Let's consult Ari Redborn, the former federal prosecutor and Treasury Department official who's now head of legal and government affairs at TRM Labs. That's a cryptocurrency compliance firm. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So this document from the White House could have been all about crypto stuff. Is money laundering on a stick? It threatens financial life as we know it. But that was not the tone of this Biden plan.
Yeah, it was really quite the opposite, and it was extraordinary. I mean, I was expecting certain things, and really sort of the positive tone was not necessarily one of them. But really, I think what it showed was, you know, we've moved from this world of, you know, conversations around sort of banning crypto or the technology itself, and really sort of approaching a world where the focus is on thoughtful regulation. If you sort of look at the document as a whole, there's a lot of focus on areas such as financial inclusion and the promise of the technology. And really sort of the thing that was sort of most significant to me was really this call for U.S. leadership in the world on cryptocurrency and emerging technology, sort of this clarion call for the U.S. to really be a leader in this space rather than to follow along.
The details of the document seems to have really cheered the crypto enthusiasts here. It also talks about the urgent need to really figure out if the U.S. will have some sort of digital currency, an official one.
Yeah, I know. It was really interesting. You know, the Federal Reserve, you know, a few months ago came out with a paper on central bank digital currencies. And basically what that is, it's a digital version of fiat tied to the central bank, as opposed to, you know, cryptocurrencies, which are essentially more decentralized. And, you know, the Fed paper was very sort of lukewarm on the idea. It sort of went back and forth, talked about, you know, essentially, we're not going to move on this without the executive branch or an act of Congress. Well, here it talked about the urgent need to research and study and potentially develop a central bank digital currency in order for U.S. leadership and economic competitiveness in the world on this. And that was really, really extraordinary. It, to be clear, it does not say that the Fed should develop a central bank digital currency, but it does say we must urgently study this issue. And it's pretty significant.
By the way, fiat is not necessarily an Italian car. It's a government issued currency that isn't backed up by, say, gold. It's just have it on faith. This is worth something. Now, crypto is also money laundering on a stick. It is used by criminal enterprises. It may be used by, for instance, Russians these days to evade sanctions. The Biden outline here, I guess we should call it an outline, does address this.
It does. And obviously, look, illicit finance issues are, you know, always top of mind when we're talking about cryptocurrency because, look, as you build a new financial system, you need to ensure that it stays safe. So the Russia example is a great one. You know, like, Russian actors, I don't think the regime or Russia or the Kremlin as a whole, but Russian actors will attempt to evade sanctions using crypto because it lives and moves outside the U.S. financial system. That said, there are controls in place. You know, large cryptocurrency exchanges where most of the liquidity exists today, have compliance controls in place. Because you talk about regulation and you talk about this executive order, cryptocurrency businesses in the United States are regulated like any money service business, like any financial institution. They have to have robust compliance controls in place. So they have transaction monitoring like TRM. They have licensing. They have to file suspicious activity reports. So they have very strong controls in place today. I will say that Russian actors, sanctioned individuals, will look to non-compliant exchanges. And that's really where I think law enforcement and regulators need to focus. And there's an entire section in this executive order on the importance of compliance and that focus on sort of the non-compliant, what I'd call sort of the illicit underbelly of the larger crypto ecosystem.
To what extent do you think that the tone of this overall document is informed by a sense that if the U.S. doesn't show leadership on cryptocurrencies, certainly China will figure it out?
I think it is very much informed. In fact, probably more than I thought it ultimately would be. There's, in fact, you know, a line talking about central bank digital currencies, about really the importance of the U.S. leading, but not just in it alone, working with partner democracies over the world to get this right. And that's, to your point, is a nod to the fact that China has really sort of led the way so far on this with its own central bank digital currency. And, you know, the U.S. to some extent is playing catch up, but there was a reference in here to, you know, needing to essentially bake in democratic principles or our values to a central bank digital currency, which is very much sort of saying, hey, if we're not going to lead in the world, there's a good chance China will. And I think there's some criticism out there that China will use their central bank digital currency sort of almost as a surveillance tool as opposed to anything else.
Ari Redbord is head of legal and government affairs at TRM Labs. That's a cryptocurrency compliance firm. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
And Amazon's board has now agreed to divide each Amazon stock by 20, so that if you wanted 10 shares at today's price, it would cost about $1,400 instead of $28,000. The idea is to make it easier for smaller investors to buy Amazon, since the big dogs don't care how big a stock is. David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.